Another Australian icon is the koala, and its genome has just been published by the Australian Museum in Sydney. This week, those involved have got together to see how best to make use of it. This is Rebecca Johnson from the museum.
It's the first meeting for all of the researchers that are involved with and interested in working on the koala genome, and we're pretty excited because it's one of the first Australian-led big mammal genomes, and so there's lots to learn and there's lots to do.
So you've got this genome, you've published the fact that you have it. In other words, it's a barcode of how koalas are made, if you like, and now you're thinking of applying it.
Yes, so we thought it was definitely worth having the backbone of the genome, so having the blueprint, but of course there's a huge amount of work that it takes to put that together. And so effectively we have it in billions of pieces at the moment, and what we're going to do is use expertise mainly from within Australia, which is very exciting, and a lot of the high performance computing to start to put that together and ultimately be able to map where each of those pieces of DNA sit on the koala's chromosomes.
Now, if an interested koala is looking on and says, what's in it for me, what's the answer?
I would hope, if they were interested, that they would hope that we're really concentrating on some of the things that will make their life a little bit better, particularly around the disease aspect. Unfortunately, koalas do suffer from quite a lot of infectious diseases. They're also particularly interesting because they're monotypic, which means that there's only one species. They have practically no distant relatives. Their closest relatives, which are the wombats, they've evolved from tens of millions of years ago. So they sit out on their own on the evolutionary tree. And so at the Australian Museum, we're particularly interested to see what kind of genetic diversity exists at the whole genome level, and that will be really exciting and have some real applications to the conservation side of koalas.
Yeah, one of the facts that I really find delicious is the one that says that koalas have got a pouch that points downwards. In other words, it's kind of upside down. Which, if you come from a wombat, makes sense, because if you're digging a hole, you don't want all that muck going into the baby's face sitting in the pouch. Have you been able to analyse anything so far of the detail of things like disease and ancestry and so on?
So in addition to the genome, we're looking at what are the genes that are expressed in different tissues from a koala. So, for example, the liver and the heart and the lungs and the brain. And also, are there some that are specifically involved in disease? So there's been three other marsupial genomes sequenced, the wallaby, the Tasmanian devil and the platypus. And so looking at the immune genes that have been characterised in those genomes, we're now starting to mine the genes for those that exist in the koala. And particularly our collaborators at Queensland University of Technology, who are experts in chlamydia research, they're particularly interested in what are the genes that seem to be associated with infection, and how do we then use that to better treat animals, to possibly even vaccinate animals, which is also a real application and hopefully a real outcome of this research.
Yeah, chlamydia both in the rear end and also affecting the eyes sometimes.
Severe infections do eventually kill the animals, and they do eventually send a lot of the animals blind. So a really, really unfortunate and very unpleasant disease.
Well, of course, Rebecca, the human genome took, 10 years at least, and any number of billions of dollars. These days, they keep telling me that you can do your genome in your kitchen in about half an hour. You didn't get the koala genome as quickly as that, did you?
Not quite, and we also didn't use the kitchen. However, it is much, much faster. The rate of the evolution of technology in genomics is supposedly going at twice the rate of computing technology, so that it's mind-blowing how quickly this technology is moving. We suspect the genome will take us a couple of years to properly assemble, and yes, if you wanted to sequence your own genome, you have an excellent reference to compare it to, but we basically don't have a reference from a very closely related animal. And so that's what we call de novo sequencing, because we're sequencing basically from new and we don't really have a map to put it against.
If I were to ask somebody out in the street, in William Street, come into the museum, about genomes and such like, they might say, well, aren't you supposed to be collecting plants and animals in the wild and putting them in boxes with funny Latin names? Isn't that the limit of what you do? What are you doing with genomes these days?
That is a great question. I love to answer that question because we do. We collect all of those specimens, and we're so proud that as the oldest natural history museum in Australia, that we have specimens that go back well over 100 years. We have specimens of koalas, and those have been used in things like climate change research. And so once we have the properly assembled map of the koala, we can go back and look at what was the diversity of the koalas that were collected 100 years ago. Do they show signs of disease? Do they show signs of some of the things that hopefully we'll find once we get a really good idea of the map? And we can see, have humans affected them as much over time as we think they have? Or perhaps haven't they? What else can we learn about them to help conserve them into the future as this very unusual but incredibly iconic animal that is so dearly loved by everyone around the world, not just Australians?
Rebecca Johnson is head of the Centre for Wildlife Genomics at the Australian Museum in Sydney.